From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 26th day of October 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard, the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company in Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, the CME Group will pay more than $2 million to those hobbled by the collapse of PFG Best, this on the heels of a dramatic drop in volume at the exchange. And scientists are warning governmental officials against introducing new plants into the U.S. as potential energy feedstocks. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. And then I'll tell you how USDA has continued to come under considerable fire over the last few years for the way it deals with the new crop corn in its series of numbers. And it all happens right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In Chicago, on a Friday afternoon, futures finished mostly in the red or lower for the day. December contract for the soft red winter wheat settlement price down 9 cents. At $8.63¾ in July, the harvest month at $8.64¾, 2¼ lower. From the hard red pit in Kansas City, July there at $9.03½. That finished a penny and three quarters lower. December corn futures and Deezer closes and not settlement prices, $7.37, down 5 cents. The March at $7.39½ in the corn pit from Chicago, 4½ lower. And May futures at $7.39, down a penny and three quarters. July corn closed at $7.29½, down 4½, and September at $6.58¼, down 0.75¢. December futures on the close at $6.35¼, finished a half higher. Settlement prices are in for the bean pit, so these numbers are good for the weekend. $15.61¼, a settlement price in the nearby November. The harvest month down 2¾ for the soybeans. January at $15.63¾, down 2¼, and the March unchanged on the day at $15.37. May settled $14.88, up 4¼. July soybeans up a nickel at $14.67. And the November contract of next year at $13.39¾ for 2013, up 4¾. A soybean meal at $4.83.40, up $2 on the day. And bean oil at $50.96, a settlement price down 49 cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Livestock finished like this in Chicago for the day. Nearby October live cattle at $125.50, down 25 cents. December at $125.25, down 40. November feeders at $145.32½ or 72½ lower. And January at $147.75, down 90 cents. Lean hogs finished the February at $84.45. The nearby December there at $78.90, up 77½ cents. The outside markets look like this. December crude oil at $86.09, up 4 on the afternoon cents, that is. November beans at $2.69. That's November beans. November gasoline and the RBOB at $2.69. Up a penny and 3 cents, and ethanol at $2.38¼. That's a tenth of a cent higher. The difference between the two is a penny and 2 cents wider today at 30.9 cents, and the natural gas on the day at $3.38½. That's just about a nickel lower for the afternoon. Heating oil at $3.09⅞, that's 3½ cents higher on the day. And the gold futures at $1,710.90 an ounce, down $1.20 for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Mostly sunny skies, a high of 49. This evening, clear and 33. Tomorrow, sunny and 51 degrees, partly cloudy on Saturday evening, a low of 30. Mostly sunny on Sunday and a high of 50. A Sunday night, clear and 31. Monday, sunny and 49. Clear on Monday night and 32. Tuesday, sunny and 48. And Tuesday night, partly cloudy and 31 degrees. By the time we get to Wednesday, sunny skies and 49. Wednesday evening, cloudy and 33. And Thursday of next week, mostly sunny skies at this point and 51 degrees. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
Well, it is a Friday afternoon. This is the 26th day of October. On the phone line with us to take a look at the futures markets, as usual, is Mike Zuzulo. He's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, what did you think of the week of trade?
I was mixed on the week. I was very excited about the Ukrainian news and the reaction in the wheat market and in the global wheat market as a whole as well. But we closed the week lower in the December wheat futures, and I never like that whenever you get something that's a market-moving event and they price it in, and then by the end of the week we're lower. So next week, being the end of the month, I think it's really important that we stay above last month's close in the Dees wheat of 902.5, or it may signal a selling opportunity for some of the technicians. And, you know, you could kind of go down the list this week, Todd. Dees corn ran up to its 765 resistance, those old 2008 highs made back at the end of June, tried to regain that as support, failed. Dees corn is now trading at its 100-day moving average, and it's not been below that since mid-June when we broke out. So kind of a tale of two cities this week with the technicals, both short-term and medium-term technicals. I think also the November beans, they failed to regain their 100-day moving average this week. Excuse me, all these things kind of add up to a pretty sour taste in my mouth, technically speaking, says that fundamentally we need to, you know, kind of generate this this mindset next week when we come back with some new fundamentals to get the trade from looking at these technicals.
Is the trade of the mind that demand has just slipped away at this point?
I do think that because of the outside markets having mixed reviews as far as the health of the economy, and I do think that because of the weekly export sales that we saw, that the trade is recognizing more and more that we are in a supply weather-related rally again when it comes to the wheat market and when it comes to even the bean market. Now, having said that, I was very pleased to see the meal market come around today on the close because the cash meal and the cash bean markets have been very, very strong this week, and I was hoping that would be a feature to the trade by the time we closed off the week's trade, and I think it was because the outside markets didn't have any follow-through selling. But I think without demand playing along with supply, and I use the wheat as the best gauge for this, without the demand playing along with the supply, I think the trade will turn more technical and obey the technicals, whether the fundamentals are good or bad. And that's kind of the rule of thumb I've been using all year, and it seems to have worked fairly well.
Well, what do we know about the supply of wheat that will come out of the southern hemisphere?
I think we know that the Argentine supplies will probably be delayed a bit, and I think we also know that when it comes to the International Grains Council numbers, that the South American supplies are even more important than normal because the International Grains Council put major exporting countries' grain supplies down at a 17-year low as far as exportable supplies. And so it does put more pressure on South America. But when you trade weather and you trade supply, you usually trade volatility and very wide swings in the markets. And I, for one, have always liked those demand markets like we had in the meal earlier this year.
All right. So let's stay with the wheat just a bit because you did mention the nearby December contract, which closed lower on the week. But July of next year, the harvest month, was a bit higher.
Yeah, and I think that here again, we're relying, I think, upon the weather. The midday models turned decidedly more wet in the back end of the model period on the midday maps, and I think that's probably why you saw the wheat actually become the leader to the downside, and traders that had been buying wheat and selling corn, I think, reversed thrusters and dumped those positions out. So I think that's where this technical aspect of the wheat market becomes very, very important next week. If we lose the weather and we've got just mediocre demand, and even though the world price has been coming up to meet our price, which is healthy, it's still probably not enough given how long we've been rallying in this market. And I went back and looked at the weekly stocks data for the corn, the beans, and the wheat. Right now, wheat supplies were down about 4% versus last year. And last year at this time, lead month futures was trading about 725. So we're a good $1.50 higher than we were in lead month futures with about the same amount of supplies that the weekly numbers show anyway.
And again, you're chalking up the weekly higher move in the July contract for wheat to unwinding of the spreads and just liquidation of those contracts.
Unwinding of the spreads and also probably playing a lot of bullish weather earlier this week, and we didn't take all that out yet.
All right. What about soybeans?
I like soybeans from a standpoint of supply and demand. I don't like soybeans from a standpoint of the outside markets. And so this is where the technicals become very, very crucial. We did close higher for the week in the November contract. We didn't have any bad negative fireworks with the November bean option expiration here today. So I think if the corn market wants to go higher next week, I think it's going to need to be led by the beans at this stage of the game. I think beans probably have the best opportunity technically and fundamentally to go higher again next week. So I'll be looking for them for a lot of leadership.
This is what's been talked about for quite some time, but the beans really haven't jumped into the leadership role yet.
No, they haven't, but they have also been able to fight off a lot of negative new crop supply talk and a lot of potential negative technical selling. Here again, when I looked at the weekly numbers, we're down about 24% on bean supplies at elevators on USDA's weekly numbers. We were trading about 12.25 a year ago in lead month beans. So we do have a significant premium in this market, but it's probably justified because we really haven't rationed that demand yet. And I was very interested that the hog weights went up a pound this week to 200 even. I think that's very indicative that the producers are not going ahead and liquidating, and actually sow prices are up very high again. Heavy sow prices are up very high again. So here again, I think when I compare the fundamentals and the technicals together, if we stay dry, relatively dry in the northern parts of Brazil and relatively wet in the southern parts of Brazil for another 15 days, I think the bean market will have likely have very little downside unless we have a really ugly outside market occur.
Is that because planting won't occur?
I think that's exactly right. I think that what you'll see is not only that, but I think you'll also see the early beans available for export that the market is probably counting on right now. We'll have to reverse that mindset.
Anything else to add before I let you go for the day, maybe for livestock?
I think that the big thing for the cattle is we made new weekly lows on the close. We'll need a reversal in that next week, or we may be setting up for a seasonal high at this point.
Thank you so much.
Okay, Todd. Thanks, buddy.
Mm-hmm. That is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana, and joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Friday afternoon. You can hear him again if you'd like on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. And don't forget, we'll post Commodity Week there about 6 o'clock this evening. Commodity Week, it's our weekly look at what's been happening in the world of agriculture. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason. Jackie Vakes is on the phone line, not to talk about the markets in particular today, but to discuss the Data Users Group meeting held the last full week of October in Chicago. She was in attendance. Jackie, thank you so much for taking the time. Why is there a Data Users Group meeting, and who attends?
Well, the USDA every year puts on a data users meeting. It is usually this time in October, and most of the time held in Chicago. Once in a while, it's held somewhere else. But the people who attend are basically anyone who is a user of data. You have people there from every walk of the industry. Grocery people. You have restaurant people. You have milk processors, you have grain people like myself, people who represent producers and end users. You have industry people such as, Cattle Association, across the gambit, basically. And it is a wonderful, wonderful opportunity because you actually get to meet and talk with and question the people who put out the data.
Right. So the data you're talking about are oftentimes the reports that we discuss on the air that come from the National Agricultural Statistics Service, or NAS, the World Agricultural Outlook Board. These are the stocks reports, the crop production reports, the weekly crop progress reports, and then some of the Economic Research Service reports and other things that come from different USDA agencies. What did you find out or hear, or were the points that you think were most salient?
Some of the points I think that were the most important, and one of the things that I have just been talking with them about for a number of years, is the crop year and when the crop year ends and changing it perhaps to better reflect what's going on in the world. In other words, the fact that we've increased the amount of corn and beans that are actually produced in the South and therefore harvested much earlier at much larger quantities than what we used to have. And what we see happen is when you have an early harvest and you increase the number of bushels that are harvested early, you actually have new crop corn that takes the place of old crop corn. And so now, and I'm sure anyone who uses the reports, listens to the reports, or listens to people like myself have understood that there's a lot of frustration in terms of being able to peg just what is old crop corn and what is new crop corn, and how does the USDA actually come up with that number. And, you know, it's no small challenge for them. For years, all they did was ask, what do you have for old crop stocks? And they had no way of identifying if any new crop had actually gone into the pipeline. They did make some adjustments to a report, and they do now get a number of how much new crop corn has actually been harvested. It's not something that's used in any reports. And that was one of my questions for them. You know, we were told that there was 1.2 billion bushels of new crop corn harvested actually before September 1st this year. And I said, I'd really like you to clarify where that fits into the picture. Because we heard people at the trade and everywhere else saying, well, you know, if we didn't have that 1.2 billion, we'd have been at zero for carryout. And the truth is that that 1.2 is nothing more than a reference number to let us know that this year we actually harvested about 700 million more bushels early than what we normally do. In other words, an average year is about 500 million bushels are harvested before September 1st. This year it was 1.2 billion bushels, and therefore this was a reference number just to let us know that, you know, harvest was that much further ahead and that type of thing. It actually doesn't fit into any report, and it doesn't have any implications on what carryout really was.
And what does that tell you about the way you as a data user should manage the data that's coming to you from USDA?
Well, what it says is that we definitely need to have better clarification. As a data user, if we don't know, the best resource we can do is go to the end of that particular report and contact the people who are in control. In this particular case, Jerry Norton is the name of the fellow who at the USDA who actually does put out all the numbers. And he was the person who addressed the question when I asked it. But I think as a data user, rather than making assumptions, what we have to do is we actually have to search out the real answer to it. You know, the thing that we have here is we have a situation where we've had 3 years of unusual crop situations, this year being the worst. I think the attitude, I shouldn't say think, the attitude that comes across is that if the correct numbers will always catch up with themselves. In other words, if something's missed, because let's say that we have producers who do not give accurate information, they'll find it out eventually, because eventually it'll show up in a green stocks report or something like that. Unfortunately, we're in such a circumstance now with having had 3 odd years and a world situation that we're in. Being able to wait for it to catch up is not a good situation, because you get these big surprises that come about. And so they are just as frustrated, I guess is probably the right word, as what we are. And the only thing we can do is, number one, I believe producers especially, and all people who use data from the USDA, because we are very blessed to have an agency like them. We are the envy of the world in that respect. When you get into, you go onto their web pages and you look at the amount of data that is there for your use at no cost, is amazing. And so we have to fight to preserve it. And what's happening is the lack of good information has led to the news media, and this is not a jab at you, Todd, but the news media in general, especially the print media, has been very, very hard on them and without really knowing all the facts. And what that's leading to in a time when we have extremely tight money numbers, you just don't get the money and the funding that we need to get all the reports that we have to be able to figure out what's going on. As an example, you know, the ethanol reports and the EIA, they actually collect numbers that were given us a lot of information in terms of how many gallons per bushel we're actually getting, and all of those types of things. But unfortunately, one government entity cannot just go to another government entity and say, you're already producing this report, can we have this report? There are statutes that affect everything. And one of the really surprising things for me, and like I said, for 4 years already, I've been asking them about the crop year and changing the crop year. They finally came with an answer. I called them 3 weeks ago and said, I'm coming again, and I'm going to ask this question again. And every time you tell me that this is governed by a statute, I want to know what the statute is and what it would take for us to change it. Well, it turns out that the crop year, even when we used to get an October grain stocks report, the crop year still ended the 31st of August. It is mandated by the original Farm Bill. And so every time you hear them talk about, if we don't get a Farm Bill passed, we revert back to the original Farm Bill. And so the question is, how do we get that changed in the Farm Bill if that's what we want to do? Now, one thing that I talked with Joe Prasaki about at the end of the meeting, what do we do now? We could, the USDA could produce an August report that would give us a much better idea of what's going on, but there's just no money there to do it, to add or change another report. And so we have to find our way around it. And I guess, instead of complaining, what we have to do is just step up and sit down and write letters and call the right people.
So in this case, we know full well that when the Farm Bill expires, it reverts back to a Farm Bill that was first introduced in the mid-1930s. And so the only way to make the crop year change is to have Congress amend the Farm Bill, I suppose. And that's what you're talking about, is getting hold of those on the Ag Committee and asking that this might be amended?
That's right. That is our only.
Well, that's going to take some organization, Jackie.
It definitely is, and that's something that I've been sitting and thinking a lot about, and how a person can, who you need to enlist. I think the first thing we need to do is we would need to get our senators and congressmen from the ag states together and working together to try and exert some pressure or some power, or maybe direct us in the right way. But the way we get that done is we write letters to our senators and our congressmen. And that's what gets it started. And I do believe that that's what we need to do. We need to voice our opinion and say, listen, things have changed since the 1930s. And therefore, we need to either get more funding so we can provide proper reports that will give us the information we need in a timely fashion and in the world we live in today, or we need to amend the Farm Bill so that we actually change the crop year to reflect what's really going on in the world, in regard to where we plant crops, in regard to how large our equipment is, how fast we can plant, how fast we can harvest.
Did you get any sense or indication from Prasaki or Norton, either one, as to whether they thought moving the crop year to July 31 or Aug 1 or something like that was a good or bad idea?
Well, the sense that I certainly got from Joe Prasaki and from Jerry Bangy, who's at the world level, was that it makes sense at this stage of the game. It's just, how do we go about doing it? And so I think that they would definitely support it. They're just not going to do the work to do it. It's not a part of what they do. And so if we as users want this, then that is something that, that we have to pursue. And it was very interesting, Todd, just as an aside, I had many, many, many people who came up after the meeting and talked with me about it and said, this makes sense. What do we do? And these were people, even one of them was even a fund manager who said, having good information that really reflects what's happening is what helps us. And so, it isn't just a matter of all of us as producers or end users that would be affected by this type of a change, but it would certainly do that. But, one of the issues you have too is if you make a change like this, you have to always think about the additional fallout that could happen. And so you never want to move fast. You have to think about the fact that now is December corn futures actually new crop or is September new crop? Well, truly, in so many cases, September is new crop already. But that's one of the things. There are so many other industries.
And it's not whether it's new crop or old crop. It's whether which one is the harvest month.
That's exactly right. Yes, that's a better way of saying it, Todd. Thank you. But, you know, it's a circumstance where you have a lot of parallel industries that are hooked up to those particular timeframes also. And so, you know, you have to look down the road and say, okay, is this going to benefit the majority, or is it going to benefit, or what is the benefit going to be? So it's not something you can, you know, you can just get on a tangent and go and do, and then look at what the fallout is. I think a good example of that is look at us with the CME and the expanded hours. Now they're talking about reducing the hours. Now the USDA has moved the reports to noon Eastern time, 11 Central time, and we will, with the current hours, we have 3 hours to trade the report. The word on the street, and in talking to some people from the CME, is if they're going to cut hours, they're going to be hours in the afternoon. And so now we even reduce the time that, you know, that we're going to have to trade a report. And so, and there was a lot of talk about that at the USDA, how they came up with the decision to make it noon, you know, rather than earlier than that. And they, you know, when they put their comment period out there, they had 140 people who commented on the times for the report. And it was all over the place. Some people wanted them to report at 5 a.m. in the morning. Some people wanted them to report at 6 o'clock at night. You know, the thing that we tend to do is think about only us and our time frame. You know, you have people in the world that are trading this market that is, you know, 2 in the afternoon. It's not 2 in the afternoon where they are. So, you know, they're looking at it from their perspective. But the majority of people said late in the morning. And so the USDA looked at it and said, and one of the questions that came up was, is this in stone? Can this be changed? And basically, the universal response was no. And so we will again have to deal with what's going on, because it's going to make for a very, pretty much a wasted morning the day of a report, because you know yourself that prior to a report, things are extremely quiet because nobody knows what they want to do. And now you're going to have this report come out at 11 o'clock, and it is going to be explosively wild, I believe. Even with a three-hour trading period, much less something that might be shorter than that.
It's all of interest, that's for sure. I know when I talked with Joe Prasaki, I asked him if that meant that they got to sleep in the night before and not go into lockup early, and they just get to get up early and be in lockup, I think, around 3 a.m. So it's not a matter of governmental officials wanting to get to work at 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning, or even 7. It's not lessening the burden on their personal time clocks.
And so. Jerry Bangy, I talked about that. Jerry Bangy says, you know, with the current situation that they have, you know, they go into lockup, you know, at about 10:30 at night, and he normally doesn't leave the office until 6 in the afternoon the next day. And so, you know, for some of these guys, you're talking about almost a 24-hour day. And he said, and he's a hit guy, you know, and he said he never had anybody who really complained. He never had anybody who was complaining who said, if it wouldn't be for the trading hour change, there's no way that they would have changed it. It would have stayed at 7:30 in the morning, and they wouldn't have done a thing about it. He said, even though it was grueling, so it's going to be a little less grueling for them, but still going to be grueling, no matter how you look at it. And so I think people tend to think that they don't work as hard as anybody else. I believe they work very hard. It's just that, you know, they have so many constraints on them. And when you go to a data users meeting, that's one of the things you begin to understand, is you just can't go and get the information that you want to. It's just like, you know, the ethanol plants all want distillers information, but they refuse to give any. So, you know, they want to know what everybody else is doing, but they don't want to tell anybody else what they're doing. And so that's why the EIA situation looked like a great situation. But EIA is not going to give up information unless they know legally that they can do it. So it's much more complex than I think most of us who just sit out here in the country really recognize.
Jackie, thanks for taking the time with us.
Thank you, Todd. Have a good one.
You too. Jackie Vakes is with Stuart Peterson. She joins us here on the Closing Market Report. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. Let's check the cash grain market. Bruce Bostard at the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company in Ludlow, Illinois, on the phone line. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Basis in your area remaining strong?
Remaining strong, being steady, although it looks like there might be a little bit of a weaker tone in it, but overall steady. Corn broke back a little bit today. We saw corn basis has been sitting at 9 over for weeks and dropped back 3 cents to a 6 over today.
Why do you suppose that might be?
It sounds like some more, with exports being weak, especially PNW, it sounds like some more corn out of Minnesota and the Dakotas traded into the Central Illinois processor market. We've seen some of that, and it looks like some more bushels have moved down.
And why would that make basis weak?
Replacing local corn with corn coming out of the Dakotas in Minnesota. It's good quality, good starch yield, and no aflatoxin in it.
And so it's easier for it to come this way than it is to go to the export market to the PNW, to the Pacific Coast.
Yeah, export market has just been really doggy. You look at both sales and loadings, and they're both extremely disappointing. You've got good yields and maybe some more corn acres than they've seen for the last couple of years up there. So as they're getting to the tail end of harvest, you got stuff looking for a home.
Do you suppose you can expect to see more corn headed south out of those areas in the coming months?
It would seem so. The BN has rates on through December or January, I forget on that, so they can run trains for a few more months, and then we'll see what happens after that. Their natural haul is going out to the West Coast export markets, but that just hasn't been happening this year.
They turn south, and is there a problem with later months? I suspect, I don't know whether it would be snow or if there's just not normally coming this way or other things.
Well, it's just been a year for unusual moves. You know, between corn coming from Tennessee and Mississippi and coming upriver and getting trucked over into the processor market, there's all sorts of weird stuff going on.
You saw that there was a bit of a weaker tone in the soybeans, though it didn't quite show up. What inklings do you have there?
Well, just look, not out actively looking for offers. Seems like the market is satisfied with what's happening. Weather, I think, is part of that. We're going to finally get a gap in it for this next week, it looks like, and we can wrap up harvest. So you'll see probably one last surge before we get the beans wrapped up.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Oh, wait, before you let go, what are your bids for the day?
744 on 1553.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. That is Bruce Bostard. He's with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report for this Friday afternoon. I'll be back in just a couple minutes. We'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast with Jim Angel. He's the state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
It's National Mincemeat Pie Day. The origin of the mincemeat pie goes back to the Middle Ages, where chopped liver, boiled egg yolks, dried fruit, and spices were wrapped in a fried or baked pastry. By the 16th century, the mincemeat pie was considered a Christmas specialty. On this day in agricultural history in 1825, the 363-mile-long Erie Canal was finished. Connecting the Great Lakes to the Hudson River and Albany, it provided a water route from the Great Lakes to New York City and the Atlantic Ocean and began the Great Canal Building Era in the U.S. Canal boats facilitated exchange of manufactured goods from the city with agricultural products from the Midwest. In 1854, Charles William Post was born. An American industrialist, he founded Post Cereal Company and created Grape Nuts Cereal. Post was being treated at the sanitarium of John Harvey Kellogg, where he was fed a grain-intensive vegetarian diet. That provided the inspiration for the manufacture of Postum, a grain product intended as a coffee substitute. 1 year later, Post followed that up with grape nuts, and 7 years later, he added Elijah's Manna to the lineup. That cereal is known today as Post Toasties. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is the 26th day of October, Friday afternoon. Let's check the agricultural weather forecast. Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey Prairie Research Institute, is with us. Hi, Jim. How are you?
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, it turned cold last night.
Yes, it did.
And colder today, I think. So
it's yesterday I was driving home after work, and I had the windows down and sleeves rolled up, and everything felt pretty good. But it's about 30 degrees colder today than yesterday.
Yeah, it was a lot colder on the way in this morning on my motorcycle than it was on the way home yesterday, I can tell you that.
Yeah, I bet so.
I had to wear a lot more warm gear. Well, that happens at this time of the year. Can we expect more and any rainfall? Farmers would like to really finish up soybean harvest.
Yeah, so if you look at the forecast, temperature-wise, it's going to remain cold for the next several days. Highs are going to hover around 50 degrees, and lows will be about 30 degrees for the next several days. However, it will be pretty clear out. There's really no chance of rain through at least Wednesday or Thursday at this point in time. So it looks like, in terms of rainfall anyway, we're going to get a nice break from that. And while it'll be pretty cold, it'll be pretty sunny, so maybe that'll help out in some of those field operations. And really, as far as the official forecast goes, there's nothing in terms of rain through Thursday at this point in time. Probably something will come up next weekend. Probably the only interesting thing that's going on right now is with Hurricane Sandy out in the Atlantic right now. That's expected to make landfall in the next couple of days in the northeastern part of the United States. Some of that rainfall might spill over as far west as Illinois, so we might see a little bit out of that probably around the Wednesday-Thursday time frame if it does happen.
We do need to get 4-inch soil temperatures down below 50 degrees at some point. I suspect that will happen, but we'd also need to be able to get into the field. So what's the possibility that it'll drop that far and that it'll be dry enough to put an anhydrous ammonia knife in?
Yeah, well, if you look at the soil temperatures right now, they're still very warm. Looking at 4 inches across the state, they're, for the most part, hovering around 60 degrees, maybe low 60s, upper 50s. And so it's going to be a while before those start to come back down. But, you know, with highs in the around 50 and lows around 30 degrees, you know, it gives the average daily temperature about 40. So that's going to start pulling those soil temperatures down fairly soon in the next couple of days. So probably by the end of the week, we'll start to see, especially in the northern part of the state, those temperatures or soil temperatures really start to come down.
Thank you so much, Jim.
You're welcome.
Jim Angel is at the Illinois State Water Survey, state climatologist, and the Prairie Research Institute as well. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. Be sure to listen in for Commodity Week on many of these radio stations or tonight at about 6 o'clock. That's at willag.org. Our guest will be Tim Hannigan. He's with Alperi U.S. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.